people. And so, yeah, absolutely. If there's people considering this as work or looking for that inspiration and continue doing it after a lifetime of it, let me add in my encouragement.
I appreciate that conversation, and thank all of you for coming to the panel as well. I think one of the key takeaway pieces is finding joy in the resistance. You have to be able to find the joy. I'm always searching for the self-care. I'm not really good at it, but I'm drawing that from you, so I'm going to try to keep that in my mantra. Finding your people, absolutely. And guess what? Y'all are all our people, right? That's why we're here in this movement. As we're talking to folks in public sector and private sector, as we're turning them on to union work, remember, 80% listening, 20% talking, because you will turn off folks as fast. Building the movement will only move at the speed of trust. So that is that piece. And again, finding the joy in the resistance and always leading by example and really looking at folks like Ella Baker, Fannie Lou Hamer, that can draw strength. So I'm always drawing strength from my ancestors. Thank you.
And thank all of you. Thank you for a great panel. It's a great discussion. I look forward to seeing you guys all around.
That wraps it up for this evening's program. You've been listening to KBOO Labor Radio and Organizing for the Long Haul, a workshop at the Labor Notes Conference in Chicago this past weekend. This has been Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday from 6 to 6:30, KBOO 90.7 FM. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kbu.fm.
Tune in to Locus Focus, a weekly conversation about our place on the planet, every Monday morning at 10 on KBOO Community Radio. Each week, host Barbara Bernstein talks with local, regional, and national experts, activists, and policymakers about climate change, river protection, the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy, salmon restoration, forest management, and all the other things that are critical to protect our planet. That's every Monday at 10 a.m. on your community radio station, KBOO.
Hey, yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Baby, you understand me now.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Today, we're here with Brianna Perrell with Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. How you doing today?
I'm good. I am very excited to be on your show and really glad that people are interested in hearing what I have to say about prisoner letter writing.
Right on. Can you tell us about how you got involved in all that work?
Initially, I was in prison and I was not socially conscious in any way whatsoever. And after I got out of prison, I ended up going back to college as a reentry student and learned about labor and ended up in the IWW Labor Union. met Lorenzo Irvin, and Lorenzo put me on this track. Lorenzo says, you need to make IWW into a labor union for prisoners. And I said, I am one little person in the world and have no idea what I'm doing. Okay, I will do that. And we formed a committee and we got together and we proceeded to get the labor union set up to where prisoners could all be members.
So just to backtrack a little bit for listeners, you mentioned two things, IWW and also Lorenzo. So can you tell us about Lorenzo and what is IWW as it relates to the Incarcerated Worker Organizing Committee?
IWW is the Industrial Workers of the World, and it's a labor union. And Lorenzo Irvin is an ex-political prisoner who had also tried to form labor unions within prisons. So prisons force people to work for pennies on the dollar or for free, and that is a labor issue. There's never been a labor union on the outside in the free world that supported prisoners organizing specifically around the issue of labor. So that was what Lorenzo's vision was when he was in prison. His mentor was a person named Martin Sostre, and Lorenzo was a contemporary of George Jackson. So if y'all look up the names Martin Sostre, S-O-S-T-R-E, Lorenzo Irvin, E-R-V-I-N, and George Jackson, you will find a lot of history that goes way back. So we are just kind of the most recent iteration trying to carry that history on and see that vision through that they all started and have struggled for.
That's a great history. And again, from that point, expounding on the development of different chapters or what have you, can you tell us kind of how that's developed in the last 10 years or so?
Yes. Initially, we were approached by the Free Alabama Movement. They approached the IWW as a whole, and someone reached out to me because I had been talking about forming the prisoner section of the IWW. So we did conference calls with Free Alabama Movement, started supporting what was going on there. Then within the labor union, we were prepared with this idea that once, like we can support prisoners in their own organizing, and we can also form labor unions with prisoners for prisoners and support their labor unions through our labor union, and just did all the bureaucracy and infrastructure and voting and parliamentary procedure and whatnot, and basically got the infrastructure set up within the union of how the branches would form on the inside and the outside. We have pretty excellent media capacity. So the labor union has existed for well over 100 years, and a lot of historians know about it, a lot of students know about it, and we have pretty good media capacity, as mentioned. And so we were able to get a lot of information out into the public view that was not out there before. Prior to the 2016 prisoner strike, it was not common knowledge that the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution actually outlawed slavery, sure, but it did not outlaw it in the case of crimes. So slavery is abolished unless you have committed a crime, is literally what the 13th Amendment said. So we just kind of went on that and started, and no one was talking about the labor issue in prison. People still were thinking that, you know, prisoners just make license plates and picnic tables for the parks department and whatnot. They didn't realize that prisoners were being forced to work for for-profit corporations. So we got a lot of media attention, and branches started springing up around the U.S. and a couple in Canada, I think we had one in Germany for a little bit, a couple other countries. And that was how it started growing and how we got our outside base of support.
And part of the strategic media is even just in the language itself that we've mentioned here. And can you tell us more about specifically incarcerated worker, prison slavery, you know, in more detail? Because these are very important things to unpack today.
So all the people in prisons, the vast majority of people in prisons are working class people. They are not the elites in our society. So even if an individual is not holding a job right that moment, their body being warehoused in this system is an economic event that's happening. They're warehousing them, being held captive is their quote job within the economy. So even if they are not doing an actual job, they are being exploited for their existence. So we do not distinguish between whether a prisoner actually has a job in the canteen or on a farm raising pork for the state or whether they're making things for corporations, because the class analysis is that they're all being exploited, be it for their body or their actual labor at the moment. So incarcerated worker, they are working class who are imprisoned. And then the other thing you asked about was prison slavery. So when a person is in prison, the state will use, and there's no difference to me between state prisons and private prisons. I hear a lot of people say, oh, well, private prisons are much worse. I don't see that. I have not yet figured that out, because the mechanisms for exploiting the labor and getting the prisoners' products that they produce into the free world market, I see no distinction. So the state or the corporation or whoever is in charge of the prison will force labor, coerce labor. They will tell people, you have to go do this job. They will pay people pennies on the dollar or zero, nothing. If the person refuses to do the job, they get written up, they get put in segregation, they can be beaten, tortured, abused, anything. The prison can do anything they want to them because no one can see on the outside what's happening to them, and their voices don't get out. So one example too, in California, there are a lot of prisoners who are used as firefighters, and that seems like you would think, oh, that's good. They can learn to be a firefighter, and then when they get out of prison, they can have a job as a firefighter, and that seems like pretty okay, and fires are bad, and firefighters are good. Yeah, but they don't get all the safety training. They don't get all the regular training, so when they get out, they actually can't be a firefighter. They're not qualified. They're undertrained, so they're being set up to be put at an economic disadvantage on the outside again, which is what leads so many people to committing crimes and ending up back in prison.
And there's so many different organizations and the IWOC chapters as well that people should plug into if they're not already and get involved with this work. And part of it entails communicating first and foremost with incarcerated persons. So getting into that, how does that work? What does that look like? So definitely, you know, we want to hear about kind of how people can kind of get involved. But what's kind of the 101 on how that whole process works and maybe some do's and don'ts?
So if people reach out to IWOC to get involved, to learn how to do prisoner letter writing, there will be contacts already built in. We have tons of contacts all over the U.S. So you will not have to worry about trying to find people to write to, for one. When we start up new chapters, sometimes there are states where we don't have contacts in a given state, and we'll do things like go on the state website and plug in a common first and last name just to find a human, and basically do cold calling letters and mail letters to complete strangers who happen to have names that exist within the system that we can find and send letters to. We find people through friends, relatives, going to visiting days outside the prisons or at the county jails and reaching out to people. So contacts, those are some ways to find them. And again, we already have a lot of contacts, so that part's already handled. And then you would show up at a letter writing. I think some chapters might do them online together, maybe scan the letters, put them in a drive and share them and do online. Either way, some may still meet in person as well. And so you'll show up, you'll be, generally we'll be given some letters and a pen and some paper. So what I have found is a lot of times when people come to letter writing, they're like, I don't know what to say. And I tell them, write about what you did today. Write about, like, if the content of the letter isn't something that you can, maybe you can't read their handwriting or you feel like so, like you can't help them at all, address what they're saying as best you can, but talk about what you did in the day. People often feel like if they talk about good things that happened to them, it's kind of like gloating or making a person feel sad because they can't also enjoy those good things out in the free world. But really, it actually takes people out of the prison environment. Reading is the only way to escape prison other than actual escape. And so they like hearing things that make them have good memories and remember what it was like to be on the outside and to be human and to be part of the world and to be able to experience going to the grocery store or walking a dog or anything positive. People really love hearing about pets. We'll send messages into the prison, and I would often write about pets or my grandmother at the beginning of the letters, you know, to kind of like just personalize it some. And I was so surprised at how many people wrote back talking about their childhood pets because it reminded them of those things and those happy memories. So those are some things that you can write about. Some couple of tips, like we are very clear that we do not fetishize prisoners. We do not believe that every single human being who's in prison is this perfect angel baby who will never cause any harm. People who are in prison with certain kinds of charges is a red flag. And so we share letters amongst ourselves and each other to make sure no one gets like kind of siloed off into a conversation that starts to feel like invasive or uncomfortable. And so we all work together and are like really open and clear with each other in the letter writing about like what we're thinking and feeling and experiencing as we're writing to people, especially the women type folks. Like, we want to be really sure everyone is kept safe and comfortable and within their comfort zone. So that's like a hugely important thing, is to like always make sure you're feeling comfortable with what you're doing. And if you feel scared, talk to somebody and we will be here and we will talk to you and it will be okay. And then you'll get a letter back and then it will be much easier the next time.
And also over time, you know, over many years, the rules keep changing, what you can send in, what you can't send in. Can you just talk a little bit about kind of how that works, you know, where you can't send in colorful paper anymore and you can't have stickers and glitter, you know, on a piece of, you know, paper for a letter going inside?
So the mail going in, the rules change constantly, and the rules also don't matter because the guards will do whatever they want. So we actually have a form letter, and it's, I like to say we're more Kafka than Kafka. For those who are familiar with Kafka, he was a writer who wrote about bureaucracy in a really heightened sense, just the uber bureaucracy. And so when they reject our mail, I send this letter back to the prison and say, we here at the Kansas City Incarcerated Workers Organizing Literature Department, in parentheses, KCIWOCOWOLD, would like to know exactly what rules we have violated. You need to send us a copy of your rules. You need to send us a copy of the letter with the offensive portion highlighted and the offended rule highlighted so that we can compare and contrast, because we never, ever, ever want to break the jail rules. Usually they won't respond. Sometimes they do. If they do respond, I take a copy of that same form letter and I staple it to the top of their response and send it right back to them. As many times as they respond, I make more copies of it and staple them all together and send. I actually got our newsletter unbanned in the state of Florida doing that. So yes, the rules change constantly. They currently are doing this thing where they say that the paper that people are sending their mail on has been soaked in methamphetamine. The prisoners receive the meth-soaked paper, add water, and have meth in prison, although everybody knows it's the guards that bring it in. Like, that's just where drugs come from in prison. And so they've created this whole new industry now where in Pennsylvania, we mail the mail to Florida. Florida, somebody there scans the mail, sends a copy of the mail back up to Pennsylvania to give to the person in prison. So it's like this whole industry that's been created around this, but it's also caused us to lose track of a lot of members. Many organizations who are not as tenacious as I am, I'm like our office person. And so I'm responsible for keeping up with people and I keep tracking them down. However I have to, I will keep finding people. But I know so many people have been alienated from friends, family, and loved ones who have lost track of them in this system because now you have to send it to a different address, but that address only accepts certain things. It's just ridiculous. Even if you get through all that, if a specific guard doesn't like a specific prisoner, they're going to come up with excuses to reject the mail. We got one time that had been doused in perfume, and no one at our letter writing wears perfume, at least not excessively, and that it had a note that this letter was rejected because it was doused in perfume. They put the perfume on it. Like, the people in the mailroom did that. So it is a constant challenge to try and navigate that. So we just keep calling, keep double checking. Currently in the state of Missouri, no matter which address I send mail to, the actual prison or the scanning facility, I get it returned and it says you're supposed to send it to the other place. I send the exact same thing to the other place. It gets a return saying to send it to the other. So I am currently getting ready to call them probably Monday and figure out where I'm supposed to actually send mail. So yes, the level of ability that the system has to tear down every bit of support that humans inside the system have is just phenomenal. They are forever finding new and more ways to break down people's connections to their friends, family, loved ones, society, because the less people have and the less people can rely on each other, the more likely are they to go back to prison.
For folks just tuning in, you're hearing from Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. And we're here with Brianna Perro with the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, talking about writing to prisoners, incarcerated workers, and prison slavery. There are other mediums now, aside from writing to prisoners, such as internet access, which is very limited. And of course, people can still, you know, use the phone on a very limited basis. Can you just talk about how those mediums either work or don't work in a lot of cases for incarcerated workers?
It's different in different states. Every state has their own process. There's several different corporations. So a lot of it is there are unique rules and regulations and corporations in different states. I have found that the emailing systems work fairly well. They also are really easy to be monitored. So the prison can do search for a keyword, and anytime that keyword has occurred, they can find it. So it's a lot easier to monitor for the prison systems. The phones seem to be pretty good. We get several prisoners. Twice a week, we will have like an open, we call it office hours, where we meet up on Jitsi and prisoners can call in. And they seem to have, some states have better luck than others, but yeah, there seems to be, even though the calls are recorded, they seem to be able to speak really freely, the ones who can call in at all. So phone calls are pretty good. Email is less good. Snail mail is most reliable. And all of it is monitored and interfered with to prevent people from being able to really communicate all that well. But we get through. We manage. There's always ways. Like we had one of our members who actually got swooped back up was telling us about how they were in the Cook County Jail and would yell into the vents, and so they would be able to hear each other communicating, yelling through the vents in the jail to be able to relay messages to each other. And I saw a thing on TV fairly recently about this county jail where if everybody flushed the toilets at the same time on the different floors of the jail, you could yell into the toilets. All the water would clear out and you could yell into the toilets and hear each other. So no matter what the system does, people will find ways to communicate. And with us being on the outside ready to hear that communication, then we can amplify their voices to media and whatnot.
That's a beautiful way of explaining it. Thank you. And I walk above and beyond the basic piece there, which is very complicated, as you explained, just to get in touch with people, write to people, communicate, stay in touch and whatnot. Then there's all this other work that happens and is always happening. Things like prison strikes, hunger strikes, all kinds of coordinated events that are national and or statewide and or international across the globe, talking about incarcerated workers all over the world and of course here in the United States. Can you talk about some of those recent things that have occurred and what might be some really recent ones too that people should really check out that might be kind of hot off the press?
So the newest one that the press release has just come out about this. December 6th through 13th of 2024, Jailhouse Lawyers Speak is calling for worldwide prisoner solidarity actions, both inside the prisons and outside the prisons. So the link to it is a little bit long. If people want to email me at IWOCHQ, IWOC, HQ as in headquarters at gmail.com, I can send you the link, or you can look up 2024 Shut 'Em Down Abolition Demonstrations, Jailhouse Lawyers Speak. Jailhouse Lawyers Speak is an amazing organization. They are jailhouse lawyers who communicate with each other throughout the U.S. and around the world as well. And they have called for this from the inside and will be reaching out to each other. So basically, we will take their lead. IWOC will be handling their media for them. So we'll be reading their, you know, getting real familiar with all the talking points and making sure that to relay those to media, and can always use help like sharing and signal boosting, all those kinds of things, even if you are not in a position where you can actually get involved with the direct letter writing. You can always share online and help raise awareness. And that is the most exciting thing I'm looking forward to. And one thing that really stands out, there's been so many actions in the past, and one thing that just really I'm thinking about right this moment, the first prison strike we did in 2016, prisoners in other countries in Germany were sending us photographs of themselves standing with signs that said, "We stand in solidarity with the prison strike," during that prison strike. And it's just phenomenal. I don't know how they got the photographs taken. I don't know how they got them out to us, or how they made the signs. There was like a big banner of from people in prison in solidarity. And it's amazing. It's amazing how word travels. And this is how we raise awareness about it. And raising awareness is, of course, the first step towards actually making changes in people's lives.
And that really circles back to the deep history there that we actually started with from the interview, which was George Jackson and the particular event you're talking about commemorated Attica and George Jackson.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right.
So back to how people can get involved and how they can also learn more about IWOC in general as well.
Email us at IWOCHQ at gmail.com. And that's IWOCHQ at gmail.com. We do have a website. It's incarceratedworkers.org. However, it is less up to date than our reality of what we're doing. We tend to not get our updates onto the website. We are on all of the major social media platforms. If you look up IWOC, Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, you'll find us and be able to see the kinds of things that we're sharing and promoting. And again, emailing us is the best way to get involved and get connected with people local to you. Or if you are just one little person out in the world and would like to start writing letters, I can help facilitate you to be able to do that.
Great. Thanks so much. Are there any other things that people should kind of look forward to or kind of be checking out?
I think the press release for the 2024 Shut 'Em Down demonstrations, that is overwhelming everything in my mind right now. So that is really my main thing that I can think of. But if you reach out and get involved and look us up online, the different IWOC chapters will have various things that they have going on in their own areas. So they will have different events and things that they're trying to raise awareness about as well.
Great. Well, thanks so much for all of the insight on this. And we can hope that more people are gonna check these things out and get involved in general. So and look forward to having you back on again sometime.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having this platform available to us and for raising our voices.
Right on. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our amazing guests from Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, Brianna Peril, and Prison Pipeline Collective member, Karen James, for post-production. Free them all. Hey, this is Adam Carpinelli here from the Prison Pipeline Collective, asking you to donate to KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM. Join the movement for community radio. Donate now at kboo.fm and click on donate. Check out the KBOO mobile app. You can mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Urge your friends and family members to keep us on the air. Go to kboo.fm and click on donate. Support the movement for community radio. Check out our KBOO mobile app. You can also mail us at 20 Southeast Avenue, Portland, Oregon. Please donate now.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our spring membership.